Later this month, the American Libraries Association's annual conference travels to Las Vegas. In this digitally driven environment, ALA members will be placing their bets on the future of reading. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. The high rollers of technology, Amazon notably, but also Apple, Google, and others, are on a winning streak. But librarians are making their way to the table. And with news of that story and many others in the book business, we bring back for our regular Friday feature, Publishers Weekly senior writer Andrew Albanese. Andrew, welcome back to the program.
Hey there, Chris.
So tell us, you've got a preview of the upcoming ALA meeting, and there's a lot going on there that's important to people in publishing as well as to readers generally.
Yeah, that's right. You know, in 2 weeks, we're off to Las Vegas for the ALA annual conference. And as usual, we have, as we do every year, a major feature package devoted to the event. And this includes a rundown of the many authors that are going to be appearing there. Authors really are the lifeblood of the event, as well as a feature on the maker movement and libraries, a look at the Spanish language market. And of course, we talk about ebooks and digital content with a feature from yours truly on the evolution of and the success of the ALA's digital content working group. Formed 3 years ago when the library ebook market was sort of in disarray, this group has really done yeoman's work in communicating with publishers and actually yielding some progress on the ebook issue in libraries. But as I explore in my feature, the group is about far more than just getting access to ebooks for libraries. It's really about pushing progress on the digital front, which they are now aggressively doing. And really, this comes at a perfect time with Amazon and Hachette in the news because, you know, right now, if you accept that the future of reading is digital, which I do, then our entire reading future is essentially in the hands of a few major corporations. And as anyone with an e-reader knows, the rules of reading are changing right before our eyes. You can never really give your e-books away, or you can't lend them like you could a physical book. You need to update your hardware and software and deal with DRM. And you have to abide by license terms, so you can't resell them or just roll over and give it to a friend when you're done reading it. So, you know, right now, the ALA is essentially the only group that has remotely a seat at the table when it comes to sort of representing the public's interest in how our future reading is going to unfold in the digital realm. And as they'll tell you, they don't even really have a seat at the table. They're mostly just standing outside the room and shouting at the table. So with Amazon and Hachette squabbling in the headlines, this is a really good time to remind readers that there's far more at stake than contract terms when it comes to ebooks.
Indeed, you're right. Very important. And in that vein, there were two big court decisions this week. And the news there is very much about our digital reading future as well. And the first case I think you want to talk about was from the Second Circuit in the so-called Haiti Trust case. Tell us about that.
Yeah, indeed. Pretty big news, and we'll be reporting more on this in the coming weeks in PW. But as was largely expected, I think, the Second Circuit Court of Appeals on Tuesday affirmed Judge Harold Baer's October 2012 verdict in the Authors Guild versus HathiTrust case. Now, our listeners will remember that this suit was first filed by the Authors Guild in September of 2011 as a parallel action to the Guild's lawsuit against Google over its library scanning program. Now, Guild attorneys had argued in this case that the HathiTrust Trust, which is a digital preservation effort created by a collective of research libraries, was in fact built with millions of unauthorized scans created by Google, and that it put the author's work at risk and deprived them of a potential licensing market. But in this decision on Tuesday, a three-judge panel of the Second Circuit resoundingly upheld Baer's fair use analysis, holding that the scanning of entire works for the purpose of creating a full-text searchable database was in fact a quintessentially transformative use. And that's a quote. And perhaps most importantly, the court dismissed the Authors Guild's contention that the scanning harmed their market, explaining that the fair use market analysis, as the fourth factor of the fair use analysis, only turns on harm that results as the result of a secondary use substituting for the original work. Now, the Authors Guild has a response to the decision, which you can read now on the Publishers Weekly website. But, you know, all I'm really going to say on that is, well, it's true what they say about denial not just being a river in Egypt. But in the statement, the Authors Guild does note that it looks forward to pressing on with another appeal at the Second Circuit, and this one in its case against Google. Now, there are some differences between the HathiTrust case and the case against Google, although that case, which was decided by Judge Denny Chin last year, largely turns on the same arguments and the same evidence as the HathiTrust case. But with Google, you do have a commercial element. And unlike the HathiTrust, Google actually displays snippets. In a line in this decision against for the HathiTrust, the Second Circuit noted that it was important, and I'll quote that too, that the HathiTrust does not display any of the work that it makes available for search. Now, the Guild reads that as the Second Circuit saying they don't endorse snippets. And I think that's quite a stretch. But we'll see how important the Second Circuit views snippets in its decision against in the Google case. So in the meantime, the Authors Guild is, you know, maintaining its stance, remaining defiant. But I have to say, this latest decision is a huge win for fair use advocates, for libraries, and for digitization, and a blow to the Guild. There's no two ways about it.
Indeed. But if they did take a blow on that case, they are happy with the outcome of another case that has only taken 20 years for resolution. and that is litigation that began in 1993 and known to all of us at Copyright Clearance Center and to you there and to many in the publishing world as Ticini versus the New York Times.
Yeah, to me, this has always been the case in the digital world. It is really a landmark case. And on Tuesday, Judge George Daniels finally approved a revised $18 million settlement to close out a case called In Re Literary Works, which culminates 20 years, as you know, of litigation that began with that Ticini versus New York Times case. Now, the case that Daniels approved the settlement for was known as Freelance. And this was the follow-on class action attempt to settle claims by freelance writers against a group of major publishers following the 2001 Supreme Court ruling in Ticini. Now, that ruling, our readers will know, affirmed that publishers could not redistribute freelancers' work in digital databases without permission. So the original settlement in Freelance was actually announced in 2005. But at that time, a slate of objectors appealed, led by author Irv Muchnick, and a long and winding process then unfolded, which eventually led back to the Supreme Court in 2010. And the Supreme Court, in that decision, in a case called Reed Elsevier versus Muchnick, sent the settlement back to the appeals court. In 2011, the Second Circuit actually finally rejected the originally proposed settlement, which paved the way to yesterday's revised deal. So, sounds convoluted, but I'll offer a couple of observations about this case. After 20 years and a lot of reporting that I've done on this, including a number of interviews with the objector, Mr. Muchnick, you know, let me say on the positive side that this brings closure to one of the messiest chapters in digital publishing history. So publishers, and as you say, the Authors Guild, surely have to be happy about that. But I think we should remember how messy this was. You know, consider this twisted path. You know, Irv Muchnick, the objector, first joined the Ticini case in 1994. In 1997, a district court judge named Sonia Sotomayor, you may have heard of her, actually ruled in favor of the defendant publishers. In 1999, an appeals court reversed Sotomayor, and in 2001, the Supreme Court affirmed that reversal. Now, you know, flash forward 4 years later in 2005, the first settlement in the Freelance case was announced. As I mentioned, it was quickly approved over Muchnick's objections. But on appeal, the Second Circuit surprised everyone and rejected that settlement on jurisdictional grounds. They said that the court could not approve payments to writers with unregistered copyrights. And this, to me, brings up the most interesting twist, because Muchnick's main objection was that the settlement actually screwed writers with unregistered copyrights, because 99% of the works governed by the settlement were unregistered copyrights. So Muchnick essentially had to fight an appeal to revive the settlement just so he could go on and kill it in another appeal. And that's exactly what he did. On March 2, 2010, the Supreme Court reversed the Second Circuit, which brought back to light the settlement and allowed unregistered copyright holders to join the class. And now that the settlement was revised, Muchnick and his lawyers actually sought to kill it on the merits, which they succeeded in doing in August of 2011 when the Second Circuit rejected the original proposed settlement. Now, here's the thing. The new settlement that was approved is frankly not very good. It's still a very small amount of money for a lot of claims, and very few people are going to benefit. And while it does give some peace to publishers who otherwise, you know, would have had faced uncertain futures over stuff in digital databases, you know, it opens sort of a Pandora's box. But in my opinion, you know, this settlement was always going to be a bad deal. And the fight that Muchnick fought for 20 years was worthwhile. You know, in the end, all the lawyers got paid. Most writers are not going to get paid. But as Muchnick observed on his blog, the case has helped establish that revenues from new digital media must be distributed in accordance with the law. It's clarified that law. And it's also emphasized that, you know, you have to have full negotiations involving all stakeholders. So one final observation about this is that, you know, this has been 20 years of hell for everybody, an expensive hell at that. So I think the lesson for everybody here is, you know, people, work it out. Step away from the lawyers, put down the briefcases and work it out. And Authors Guilds, maybe I'm looking in your direction.
Well, we'll see about that, but certainly that gives a lot for Andrew Albanese to report on, and he shares it with us every Friday here in Beyond the Book. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.